Q.
Q.
I got something here. I want to see if you know what this is.
A Q.
A Q. That's right.
Yeah, right then.
Hello and welcome from deep inside Jolly Roger Studio. This is the Q Filmcast. And whether you're listening online, worldwide, or perhaps nationwide on one of our affiliate stations, thanks as always for tuning in. If it's your first time with us, let me tell you what we do, in case you don't know. We're the show which brings to you our review of a particular film currently streaming on Netflix Instant. We gather here each week, Jolly Roger Studio, where we go around the table to tell you what we thought. That and our weekly top three list, inspired by the movie in question. And that's the way the game is played. This week, talk about the movie in question. I usually come up with something pretty clever here.
This movie was clever enough.
It was clever enough.
Right. Who says it's so clever?
I don't know. It was clever enough to stump me. Right. So I'm just going to call it what it is, or at least what IMDb called it. Right. We're going to be talking about the 2005 award-winning indie romp, Me and You. And everyone we know. Did I say that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I always want to say you and me, but
me
it's
too.
It's me and you.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, but sure.
Grammatical sense anyway. Yeah.
And actually, it's kind of funny because this is a Matthew St. Hoodie pick who we'll intro in just a minute. When you told me to watch this film on Netflix, I went home and I searched all over for you and me and everyone.
I think that's what I said.
Right. I'm like, what are you doing to me, man? Great. We're going to talk about a film that you can't watch.
Right.
No, it's me and you.
Me and you.
And everyone you know. And that is, ready for
we
this?
Know.
Yeah, we know.
This is going to be really tricky for everybody to look up. We're like, what's the title? I got nothing.
Well,
it's me and you
and everyone we know.
There right. It is.
Me first. Always put me first, remember
that. Oh, that's... Wow.
I don't know. But I'll tell you.
Grammatically correct, it would be you and I and everyone we know.
Oh, God.
That's still a lot of ands, isn't it?
I know. It is.
Oh, my God. I feel like I'm watching The Electric Company or something. I'm getting my lesson of the day in grammar. Yeah. Oh,
you know, we Spider-Man to look forward to.
Hey, you know what we have here?
What?
Spider-Man. Oh, that's right. That was the best part of that show, wasn't it?
Morgan Freeman and Spider-Man.
Yeah. It only happened like once every five or six shows, but you were hoping it was the Spider-Man one. I recall this.
I love Spider-Man.
Guys, we have a director. We have our first female director. And if you don't know what that is, we coined this phrase way back.
Yeah.
If you take a director and you put him or her as an actor in the film, you have a director.
Director.
First female director. This is from director Miranda July, and it stars John Hawks as well. That's pretty much it. We'll get into the players if we have to. So if you've seen it, keep listening to see if you agree or disagree with our take. Or if you haven't seen the film, keep listening to see if it's something you may want to queue up yourself. And once again, I am Michael, along with, as always, to my left, James Hardsub Savage.
What's up, Maestro?
I always say that with such gusto. Yeah. I'm always so happy to see you.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm a good guy to see.
And this is where you say, well, how are you doing, Maestro?
What's up, Maestro?
Oh, that's what you usually say. Oh, you know, I'm doing okay, Savage.
Stop with the back and forth.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's on board.
Yeah, totally on board. But yeah. I'm having a pretty good day.
Good.
You know, I...
Didn't set your hand on fire.
Didn't set my hand on fire. Thank you very much. I didn't get crammed into a small apartment.
Sweet.
I didn't have young teenage girls forcing me to do things I didn't necessarily want to do or know what to do with.
Huh. I don't know how to respond to that.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
I'm not sure either.
And then to your left, we have, look at this. Look at this guy, the patron saint of quality outerwear. And that is Matthew St. Hoodie.
Hello.
The man who queued up the film.
Yep. Outer footwear this week, right?
Outer footwear?
I don't know if there's inner footwear.
That's right.
Socks.
Size 8.5, I bet, right?
You'd think so, but no.
Yeah, okay. That'll lead into something later. It'll make sense later.
I know that. I know that trivia.
Oh, you do? Okay. What about this trivia? This is a fact, actually, and that's to your left. We have Math. Sorry, Math.
Yeah.
Math. We've called him Meth Head for years, and it's just...
No.
It's finally catching on.
Let me apologize for that. That's Max Gumbo Johnson.
Hey, what's happening? Just waiting for that 33 mark, buddy.
How you doing? How you doing over there, Max?
I'm doing good.
You've been busy lately?
I'm always busy. You know me.
Yeah.
Non-stop.
Usually before the show, I ask how Max is doing. He says, busy, just busy.
And I say the same thing every week.
Let's round out the cast by telling you about our producer. He's to your left, and that's Adam the Bomb Rogers.
The Bomb.
Konnichiwa.
Hello.
I think we can do an all-English lead in today, I think.
Just making fun of Adam.
So that's us, and let me tell you how you can keep up with this. Pretty much any way you want to.
Anyway.
You can Google us. You'll find something. I'll tell you what you will find. You'll find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, Google Plus, YouTube. Doesn't matter. But I do recommend, first and foremost, that you go to our site, theqfilmcast.net. .net. That's it. That's our website. You go there.
Net?
You sure?
Yeah. .net?
What?
Yeah. And the Spreaker thing. It's Spreaker.com.
You go to Filmcast. Listen, I like the Spreaker.com. You go there. Not Spreaker. Spreaker.
Spreaker.
TheQFilmcast.net. It's a great way to listen to the show, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you've tried that.
I have.
Up on there.
Yeah, and streams are great.
Doesn't buffer streams. Yeah, it's great. But yeah, definitely go to TheQFilmcast.net, though. There you can find ways to give us your feedback. Maybe tell us what you think of this movie or any movie that we've talked about in the past.
It's kind of our hub.
It's a hub.
Yes.
It's a collect-all, as we say. It's our collect-all. Go there. All right, QFilmcast.net, and let's get into this, guys. You ready to queue up the conversation?
Sure.
Let's do it.
Let's do this thing. And as we previously stated, me and you and everyone we know, 2005, a lot of people like this film.
A lot of people don't.
A lot of people don't like it.
Say the same thing.
I don't know, man. God rest his soul, Roger Ebert's your champion this thing. I don't know. But that doesn't always bode well sometimes.
Well. Didn't he champion Hit and Run?
Yeah, he did. Okay. Okay. So my theory goes straight
Devil's to hell.
He liked
Devil's Double.
Yeah, he did. No, I don't have a lot in common with Roger Ebert.
He started losing it towards the end of it.
Yeah. Me and You and Everyone We Know, 2005, written and directed by Miranda July.
Yeah.
This stars her, obviously, John Hawkes. I think we're somewhat aware of him. If you haven't seen Winter's Bone, that's him. If you haven't seen
Is that him?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't even realize that.
If you haven't seen Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene.
That was awesome.
Oh, yeah, that's him.
I knew I recognized that guy.
Wasn't he in V for Vendetta? That was Guy Fawkes.
He's been in all kinds of, like, bit parts. Yeah.
That's a stretch. I got it. But
I have no idea.
Stretching, Max.
I'm going to go with you on that. Sounded interesting, Max. I'll look into it later.
Okay.
Lincoln, American Gangster. He's been a lot of, like, small roles. But he's known for Winter's Bone. Mm-hmm. And you've seen Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we talked about, too.
Yeah.
This inspires our top three. We'll get to that at the end of the show. As they all do, they inspire something. And this week's no different. This inspires our top three what, Hoodie?
Awkward relationships.
Kind of like what we have between you and I.
Absolutely, every bit of it. But it's charming and endearing, and we don't know how to live without it.
No. He can't quit me. No. But he does complete me. You do complete me to steal another line.
Mostly.
Top three, I was going to say quirky relationships, but you want to go with awkward.
Quirky is great. That's way better.
You like quirky?
Quirky and or awkward.
Yeah,
quirky is good.
We're going to go with quirky relationships.
Okay. That was never expressed to me.
It just for some reason, came to me in my head. I don't know. But we're going to do that at the end of the show. So we'll get into our reviews and our breakdown of this film in just a minute. First thing we want to do is talk about what the critics basically gave it. Or, you know, we default to IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes. So let's do this. IMDb gives this film. What do you think they give it, Max?
Me? Yeah. IMDb, I'd say 7.6.
Man, he is like the Kreskin.
Yeah.
The great Kreskin. 7.4.
Oh,
you
really?
Cheat.
Well, I mean,
you're
no,
so good at this.
I don't go and memorize it. I'm just taking a guess.
I would ask you, producer, but you're looking at the screen.
Looking at it.
Cheater. Yeah. You cheater. Let's go over to Rotten Tomatoes. Critics, what are you thinking there, Savage?
I can see your notes.
Oh, every week I can quit asking.
Go to him.
Go to Matt.
I don't know. 8? Is that a letter?
It's a percentage.
81.
Oh,
and
nice. Yeah, you're not bad.
Kinda.
It's real fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Critics 81, users 85.
Those are pretty close.
Yeah, it had a lot of good indie love. You know, the indie quirk.
It's sure.
Kind of indie quirk film.
They're a quirky group.
Let's get into the synopsis of this film. You want to do that, producer?
Yeah, that's
I really want to hear the synopsis.
The next step in this show was this part, so let's do it.
No, I can't see what he's looking at online. I bet you he's online right now trying to meet
looking
people.
At the synopsis?
No, I know what he's doing. Right.
Hands up, buddy.
Yeah. All right, here's what you have with this film. Here's what you have, and then we'll get into our review. We're talking about Me and You and Everyone We Know, 2005, from director Miranda July. A handful of disparate characters, both adults and children, find themselves navigating the tricky waters of intimacy in this award-winning independent comedy drama. Richard, played by John Hawkes, is a recent divorcee who is alternately exhilarated yet terrified with his life and the world around him. While he believes great things are in store for him, he's also become so despondent about his wife's recent departure. They're getting divorced. Sounds like she might have died, didn't it, for a second? Right. No, he's getting divorced from his wife, okay? Right. That in order to impress his sons, he willingly sets his hand on fire. Soon, Richard meets Christine, played by Miranda July, at the shoe store where he works. Christine likes to paint a picture of herself as a stylish and confident video artist. But in truth, she supports herself as a driver with a car service for the elderly. And oh yeah, she'd very much like to meet someone special.
Oh.
Yeah, so nice. As Richard and Christine fumble their way into a relationship, Richard's two sons have issues of their own. 7-year-old Robbie has met someone in an internet chat room who responds to his naive and scatological perceptions of sex. There you go, Adam. While 14-year-old Peter finds himself on the receiving end of unusual and unexpected attention from two girls in his class. Me and You and Everyone We Know was the first feature film written and directed by noted performance artist Miranda July. The picture won prizes in the 2005 Cannes Film Festival and the Sundance Film Festival. Here's a trailer, piece from the film. We'll come back, tell you what we thought, and
at least yeah. We're all together on this. So those are comfortable?
I guess so. I mean, they kind of rub my ankle.
You think you deserve that pain, but you don't.
I would just march in there and show it to them, you know? No one is going to live your life for you.
Okay, that's not how it works. But okay. So how's the separation going?
I was trying to save my life and it didn't work.
When do you get to take that off?
I don't know. I think when it stops hurting.
I want to be swept off my feet, you know? I want my children to have magical powers. I am prepared for amazing things to happen.
Okay, so there you go. There's a trailer, a piece from the film we're talking about. 2005's Me and You and Everyone We Know.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
You got it right.
Stuck the landing, didn't I?
Right.
Okay, so this is the part of the show where we get into a little bit of did you know facts, figures about the film.
Sure.
A little bit of a trivia, as we say. Check this out. In the film, Christine's white loafers are actually Miranda July's own shoes. Did you know
this?
Whoa.
That's fascinating.
That is.
Wow. I'm blown away.
I'm so glad I know this now.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. And they're visible in a photo in the soundtrack CD as well.
Don't care.
We don't care about that.
Wow.
In the film, Christine receives a cell phone call. And I wanted to put this in here because it'll tie into me.
All right.
She receives a phone call identified as M&F Department Store, which stands for Meyer and Frank. A local Portland department store.
No, those yeah. Portlandians, they're so full of themselves.
Is that what that was? Portland?
It never really did say where it was located, did it?
I have no
it?
Idea.
Nope. I was thinking Southern California.
That's what I was thinking.
It was
too.
Southern California because there were palm trees. It wasn't Portland.
I'm thinking about the license plate too. Yeah, it was California.
Yeah.
So I don't know why a department store from Portland's calling her, but apparently it did.
She ordered some shoes.
The parent store.
Yeah, she ordered some shoes. And did you know that anytime someone in the department store asked for a shoe, they requested an 8.5.
Most women do.
Wonder what that means.
And Adam.
Most women.
Adam.
Oh, Jesus.
8.5.
Miranda July shot with 50-minute tapes so she could have longer takes and would not have to break the flow of the child actors.
What a smart girl.
It is smart.
Okay, so there you go. There's the did you know. And I guess that what we learned here in the did you know is that there's not a whole lot to know about the film.
Right.
There's not a whole lot of did you know.
The composer used a Casio SK-1 keyboard, my first keyboard.
You're like I said, there's not a whole lot to know.
I noticed that too.
You are such a nerd for knowing.
No, that's a definite SK-1 sound.
Yeah.
You're talking about the underlying score.
It's the first sampling
clearly
keyboard ever made. SK, sampler keyboard.
There you go.
Clearly, okay. That's clearly what they're talking about.
Producing on the fly. He comes back and stomps it with a quality did you know fact. Right. Currency, you know, because we don't use thumbs up, thumbs down here to rate this film. Why would we? That's stupid.
Stupid.
We let the film tell us how we're going to rate it. And tonight we bantered this around a little bit. I think we can land it on something. Hoodie, reveal, it's your film. Currency, how are we going to rate this film?
We decided on back and forth forever.
Back and forth forever.
Yep.
Forever.
In quotations.
Would you think the poop would break down at some point?
It's got to. Right. But technically, it's already broken down. How much further can it break down?
Well, it would liquefy. No.
You can turn it into gold.
You know, Mythbusters, I think you have your next episode.
We saw Holy Mountain.
All right, so get into ratings. Yeah, we're going to go over to the man that queued it up. That's the way this works, to lead it off. That's Matthew St. Hoodie. Me and You and Everyone We Know. Talk to me. Back and forth forever. How many you give this film?
I'm going to have to go 9. I'm a champion of this movie.
You are a champion of this
film. I like this movie quite a bit.
Yeah. Okay. Matt, I want you to take your rating. I want you to give it to Max. And Max, I want you to give it back to him. And you guys go back and forth forever.
You're so romantic.
No, this is so sweet.
So turned on right now.
Back and forth. I'm going to have to give it six back and forths.
Six back and forths. Okay.
I kind of like the general concept of the movie, but it came off a bit too full of itself and quirky for its own good.
Yeah. All right, good. So you give six. Let's go over to a producer. Let's go around the table here. Six for you, back and forth forever. Now, you take your review. You give it to Adam.
Here, Adam, take my review.
Well, I'm going to give it the appropriate number of back and forth. Number two.
Were you so bored?
I was extremely bored. Really? This is a pointless and predictable movie.
Predictable? What's all right, we'll get there.
The whole movie's predictable.
Predictable.
Well, there's only one part that's not, but go.
All right, he's going to have plenty of time to get into that. Pointless and predictable. And that was pretty predictable, wasn't it?
Yeah, speaking of
predictable. No, okay, Adam, good job there. All right, two for you. Now, you take your review. You give it over to Savage.
I found it difficult to rate this film. And it's going to sound low, but I'll give this six. And the six is because I would watch it again.
Yeah.
You know, it's over average. But I can't give anything above that because anything above that, I have to explain why it's above that. So I'll go with a six and I'll explain why.
Okay. Yeah. There's some people that there's certain things that, man, if that wasn't there, would bring it just up a bit. Yeah. Okay. So six. Now, Savage, I'm going to take your.
All right, movie.
I'm going to take back. It. I want you to pass it back and forth to me.
Forth. Yeah. Right. Forever.
Forever and ever, buddy. Forever. That's a long time. Are you in?
Back and forth.
That's a commitment, Sam.
That's a commitment. Okay. Commitment. Let me tell you what I thought.
Parentheses.
What did I think? Yeah, pretty clever there, though, wasn't it?
Right.
All right, what did I think of this film? I think it kind of depends on when you ask me. It's funny how some movies demand a second viewing. This one really did. It's like all these films I develop a relationship with. I have a weird relationship with this thing. After I watched it, I felt like, okay, I went to the grocery store, and then I got home, and there's my list. Now I know what to shop for. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Second viewing, I really was grabbed by this film. I was put off a bit the first time. Second time I grabbed it, gave me a lot more. I'm going to give this a strong seven, bordering on eight. I may bump up to eight. You know, I'm not sure how I feel about a certain chunk of this film. It is brilliantly written. I think the writing is incredibly brilliant in its own way, and that's what holds it together for me, is just simply what it is on paper.
That's 30 back and forths.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
I wonder how long that would take. 30.
Nope. I don't know. Not at all. Not in the slightest little bit there.
Hope I never find
leave
out.
Leave that thought. Nope. Leave that train of thought.
What do you mean you hope you'll never find out? I know I'll never find out. Yeah,
it's your currency, sir.
I think it's physically impossible, actually.
It would take forever.
And ever and ever.
All right.
Yeah. We may have our first science experiment.
Nope.
Nope. Nope.
Okay. All right. So there you go. There's our ratings. Our basic overall back and forths. For the film, God, let me tell you what, if you've seen this film, you're laughing. You know you are. You know you are. And let's go back to the man I know very well, and that is the man that queued this film up. That is Matthew St. Hoodie, the patron saint of quality outerwear, coming in strong with a nine.
Yep.
Talk to me about why.
To be honest with you, I'm a little surprised. I didn't think everybody would go high, but I kind of came into this thinking that this is a love it or hate it kind of movie. So I was expecting either twos or eight or nines, but I was not expecting the sixes and sevens that seem to be the majority here. I think that's really interesting. We'll go with interesting.
You were ready to be make a stand. You were going to make a stand here.
No. I did come in to defend the movie, but where Max is sitting, saying that it was pretentious and loved itself too much, I cannot defend against that. It absolutely does.
Yes.
It is a very pretentious movie, and it's very self-important. I get that. But I think that Miranda July really rides that line between pretentious and just completely sentimental. And I love her more for it. I don't know how. I mean, you got to give her a point just for being able to do that.
Yeah.
So anytime it started getting a little pretentious, she would pull off the scene with sentimentality that just brought it home. And I thought I was just completely impressed. I teared up a lot during this movie.
Yeah.
And it's really a weird story. I mean, the story is strange, but how it's shot is very strange because it's a string of really nice moments, basically, that kind of just get looped together and to make a cohesive story. And I thought that was, I mean, just imagine how hard that would be to do.
I told you the writing's what got it for me, man. Cohesive. That is tough to put this thing together the way it was.
So, you got to give her a point for that. And I love Miranda July. She's one of the only people I follow on Twitter.
Wait, can I
follow
ask you
like
a question?
Five people.
I've heard the name. I know nothing about her. Yeah. I looked into her a little bit. Couldn't find a whole lot, to be quite honest.
Okay.
I know she's a performance artist. I know she has a cultish following almost. People love this woman. But what is it that you like about her?
I found out about Miranda July with this movie, having seen it, you know, more than a couple of years ago. And since then, since really having liked the movie, I saw the future. Didn't really like the future that much.
Okay.
And she's got a book out that's interesting. Mm. Haven't read the whole thing, but it's kind of like this movie. It's just set up in a bunch of short stories, and they're interesting. Yeah. And you kind of take them. Everything is exactly the same. It's pretentious with just a slice of sentimentality. It just kind of fits somehow. It's very Miranda July.
Sometimes pretentious can be done right.
I don't know how. I mean, you say pretentious, and it's a dirty word. It's a bad word.
Well, it is. It is.
Yeah.
But when you temper it, like you say, like you're making the case with, when you temper it with sentimentality, I mean, on its surface, sentimentality is a bad word. But when it's tempered, I think it can mix for something
palatable.
So you're
talking like a yin and a yang thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Boy, you guys are really going back and forth right now.
Well, hope we don't do it forever.
I hope not. Let's keep this one clean. Let's go over to Max Gumbo Johnson. Six. You're sitting there with a six. Tell us why.
I'm kind of like you. I watched it. I had to watch it twice. I didn't really get it the first time. I didn't think the acting was very good through a lot of the movie. But I can see what Matt's saying. It's just a string of little non sequiturs that got put together somehow into a cohesive story.
Perfect moments.
Oh, that's okay. Well, I call them
non-sequiturs. That down.
Yeah. But I hate to fall into that trap if there were no likable characters, because I didn't hate anybody, but I didn't really like anybody
either. You had to
either.
Love the kid, though.
Yeah. The little kid was the best part of the movie.
That kid was fantastic, man. I wanted to adopt right then and there. I turned into Angelina Jolie the minute this film ended. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, he was the best part of the movie. But it came across as like, okay, this could have been an interesting story in and of itself, but they just had to make it so indie. It's like she was trying to make it this indie movie and make it quirky and just doing things to be weird just for the sake of being weird. I get that to a certain extent, but
that's really how she is. Sorry to interrupt you, but I mean, if you look at her performance art, like the video stuff, that's actually her stuff. That's really very much her. The shoe thing, that's very, very her. So this movie, you can call it pretentious, but it's very much who she, you know, how she defines herself and who she is.
Well, I mean, based on that comment, I'm not sure I'd like her performance art that much, to be honest. But the stuff, that one clip they show in the movie where she's standing in front of a crowd shouting, you know, saying, "I'm inadequate," and they all applaud and everything. I think, oh, that's kind of clever.
Yeah.
But that opening scene where she's doing the different voices for the guys, I was like, this is so annoying. I am about to tear my hair out already for this movie. But it does grow on you.
It does grow on you, yes,
and
it does.
And you really do connect with some of the characters a bit more. And I said some, not all. The shoe salesman guy that set his hand on fire, I genuinely connected with that guy. I knew exactly what that guy felt like.
Yeah, he wanted to be a good father so bad. He didn't know what to do
You connect with her, too, because you're like, okay, the whole movie is basically about people wanting to make a connection with other people.
Yeah.
That's what the movie's about.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't want to do that?
And how your
Unless
view,
you're Ted Kaczynski or somebody, right. You know, you want to be around other people and have that communal feeling.
What I really picked up strongly on this film, too, is it's also a film about how others think they see you and how you really are. Yeah. That played through on everybody here.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, that's totally a large part of the movie. Mm-hmm. But it just seemed a little too, I don't want to say self-aware.
Yeah.
That's sort of cliched and overused, but I mean, it applies here, I think.
No, I know what you're saying. Almost a little too off the rack.
No.
In a way.
It's not off the rack at all. It's a little too, it's going out of its way to be something out of the ordinary.
When I say off the rack, I'm talking about the quirky template. The quirky indie template. Mm. Let's get the little quirky soundtrack.
Yeah, that.
This little magical, almost Dr. Seuss overlaid everything where the colors are vibrant, almost otherworldly, almost childlike. Let's follow this path kind of thing.
Well,
feel fresh because of that.
That's the problem with indie film now. Yeah. They said, it's a, like you said, it was an indie romp. Well, I mean, is that now what we consider an indie movie? Something that's quirky and out of the ordinary and kind of strange and kind of, you know, self-aware and blah, 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 blah.
Predictable.
And it's not, predictable. And it's not predictable.
No, I, don't, no, I well, wouldn't be predictable to this.
Yeah, I want
to
hear that. Let's go to
you
that.
You want to go to Adam? Adam, yeah, listen, okay. You gave this way down the totem pole. You're sitting there swirling around with a number two.
Swirling.
Come up out of the bowl and tell us why.
He's in light company.
Circling.
Okay, first of all, it's an indie film, and the first thing that you think of, oh, they're going to have a quirky relationship. Boom, right out the bat, there's a quirky relationship. And then the first person you meet is... who is very emotional, all of a sudden, first thing I thought of, well, I bet you she's going to be an artist. What happened? She's an artist.
She's literally an artist.
At the very beginning, before I even knew
you're
that
you're literally
an
watching her art, and you're like, I bet you an artist made this.
Damn. Anyway, I mean, that's the first thing that popped in my head is her doing this. She goes, oh, yeah. She's an artist.
Yeah.
And then she's going to try to put her art somewhere. She's going to be denied. That happened.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden... oh, at the very end of the movie, it's going to come back around.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Wow. Yep. There it is.
All right. I understand what he's laying down. I got what he's saying here.
And then the very first thing was the picture of him or she's trying to talk to between two different people. And I was like, well, someone's going to die and that's going to happen. There, she's going to have to do this as a soundtrack.
Okay.
A lot of this is easy to say in hindsight, too.
This was literally me thinking of it happening before it even happened.
Okay, then.
Really? So you were playing the movie out in your head going, here's what's coming.
Here's what's going to happen.
Right. Okay. Can I ask you a quick question? You're a lover of horror movies, right?
Yes.
Can you not sit down with every horror movie and do that?
Yeah, you can.
Almost every one of them. I can sit down and tell you every horror movie.
There's a lot of good ones that are different.
See, and that's where I may part ways with you because...
but this one was very predictable. And the only part that wasn't predictable was the little boy, which was the best part of this entire movie.
Yeah.
Oh, and then the lady who was works all the time. What right. First thing popped in my head? She's looking for love. Guess
everybody.
What?
Everybody,
the lady that works all the time,
the woman who runs the art institute.
Okay. Oh, yeah. She was into all kinds of things.
Yeah, bro.
Hey, listen,
and that's my view. So y'all can run with it.
Number
from there.
Two.
I only have
you know what?
Another thing number to say two. About this whole entire movie.
His brow is parsed. His lips are pursed. He's intense. He's defending his ground.
Yeah.
He's also describing stuff that's in like every movie. If I see
every
a protagonist
movie
in every movie, if I have a good guy and a bad guy, I'm like, man, they're probably gonna fight.
Right. I think he defended his ground. We're gonna give him a little bit more space here in a little bit to get into some of the scenes.
Yeah.
You're gonna tell me a scene that you liked. You're gonna tell me a scene that you really did not like. He did a good job there.
Yeah, he did.
I don't part ways with you on anything you said as far as the way it made you feel. I can understand how people can feel that way. Savage, what are you sitting at, a 7?
6, 7. I may go up, may go down.
God, I want
six.
You. Yeah, I just want you to take it and back and forth between you
well,
and me,
the,
buddy.
The,
come
the
on.
The thing is, I guess I have the indie bias as well. When it starts with the doe-eyed, damaged protagonist.
Sure.
I'm like, man, really? Okay. Yeah. I mean, is this what you're giving me? You're giving me the wide-eyed, doe-eyed, like, why am I being hurt here? And we don't get one, but we get two. We get her and him. They're both this, like, kind of this wide-eyed, innocent, like, damaged innocence.
Yeah.
Lost. And, okay, you get on board with it from that. Then the quirk factor kind of, you have to accept what makes them this way.
Yeah.
Okay, you get on board with it, and you know if it's unique enough, you can get on board with it. And the self-immolation thing was weird.
I thought it was alcohol.
But he explains it later.
I thought that was crazy.
He has a good point.
Yeah, no, and it's just weird. And I think it's symbolically, it sets a tone for that when the damage is done later in the film, that he's ready for contact again.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's some symbolism in there. And toward the end of the film, when I was watching it, I started picking up on a lot of that. It's more substantive than on its surface you think it is.
That's why it needs a second viewing. For me, it did.
One of my problems, and one of the reasons why my rating is so low is like Max says, they're not quite non sequiturs, but they're just like these side stories, these tangential stories that are based around these children, but all the children's stories are like these hypersexual stories. It's like, why do the children have to explore the sexuality?
Can I tell you one quick thing here? This film was given a rating R because of that. A lot of people said, man, I don't like the way this is coming together. You're going into territory with issues and themes that don't necessarily need to be together. And a lot of people had problems with this film because of that.
Yeah.
And that keeps me from going a little higher as well. It is uncharted territory in a way. and it's uncomfortable territory.
Yeah,
but and it was and, done well. It's not like it was.
But at the same time, yeah, I don't disagree with that.
But at the same time, yes, I'm there. But then at the same time, it's done well. How do I feel about it?
Yeah, maybe I should go a little higher on this film because it is done well, and maybe that uncomfortableness is something that I should embrace. It's, but. It just seems out of place, you know. There, there seems to be this innocence with the two primary adult protagonists, and then all the children are exploring these darker territories, and it's just unsettling in its way.
Yeah,
there's a lot of beautiful with the film, the old couple.
Yeah,
I waited 70 years to find the woman of my dreams. Mm-hmm. You know,
she was in Harold and Maude.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she was the girl that did the fake Carrie Carey.
He's whipping out the ultimate did you know well after the fact.
But there's a lot of like rote stuff. Yeah. You know, just it's like a lot of cliches. Mm. Like, all right, let's plug and play here. I think the shoe salesman was like, let's find the most banal job that you could ever have and still make him attractive.
Right, right.
Al Bundy.
I thought exactly. Al Bundy a lot.
I mean, I did too. I kept going back to the Al Bundy thing.
Al Bundy?
He sold shoes, man.
So if anybody... From here on out, sell shoes.
Yep. See, I don't have a problem with that. I love to think about Al Bundy. No, so I was fine.
I never even thought of this movie as cliche in any – pretentious, I'll say yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Right, sentimental, yes. Cliche, no.
Yeah. And by the way, we're talking about the 2005 film, Me and You and Everyone We Know, in case you don't
know. Now, her – that was completely different, the elder cab and her particular type of performance art. Some of it didn't seem to go together. It's like – so you're watching these little vignettes. Okay, you can appreciate the vignette for what it is because you understand how they're structured within themselves. Can I ask
you
a question?
Have you seen this film one time?
Yes.
Watch it a second time. I am completely with you on the first time. What is this? What? These are all vignettes. Do they really string together? And you know, my analogy about getting back from the grocery store and then I find my list.
Right.
I grabbed my list. I went back to the grocery store, watched it again. Now I know what to look for. I'm not distracted about what is this. Now I know what to get into.
I don't know that that tracks, man. You shouldn't.
It
have
does
to,
track for
you,
me.
You shouldn't have.
You should
to do
try
this.
Watching it 12 times. It's even better.
Okay.
You did
Pulp
go
fiction.
You know what?
You shouldn't have to do that, though. You shouldn't have to say now that I know what's going on.
I don't know, Savage. Let me tell you
honestly,
something.
No, we say that about a lot of movies that come through here. Like, oh, on first viewing, I didn't like it, but second viewing, I was actually starting to connect some dots, and that started making sense.
Yeah, and this is the film that kind of brought me on board. Either way, 12 times you went back and forth to this film a lot, didn't you?
I've seen this movie since 2005. Loved it since then. And I watch it all the time.
I may watch it again. I have a feeling I'm going to like it more and more because here's my thing. I'm on board with you the first time, okay? But, you know, at the same time, this is the film that also made me think that, you know, maybe you don't have to get it on the first time. I mean, they didn't make this film in a day. Why should I watch it in a day and get it? I mean, once I understood...
Oh, that's crap, man. Well, don't throw that at me.
No,
don't say, because I didn't get it the first time.
No, listen.
He's not saying that. All he's saying is give it a second run.
I'm just saying that a lot of films like Apocalypse Now, you mentioned one time, you need to see it a second
Upstream
time.
Upstream Color. Got to have a second time.
Here's what I'm saying. Maybe it's right or wrong. Maybe I should get it on the first time, but I didn't. Second time, I did. Maybe that's to the film's credit
or discredit.
Or discredit. But either way, once I knew what to look for, I wasn't distracted by what is this. I'm like, okay, let's see how these details appear now. Because there's a big reveal at the end of the film. This film is a big reveal after a big reveal to me. Why? Okay, that's why. Why?
I think there's one big reveal.
Well, what I'm saying to you is that as it's going on, I'm not sure why it's going on. Once I knew and I went back and was able to grab each one of these vignettes for what they were, they become beautiful little scenes to me. As off-putting as they were the first time, second time they were not. And, you know, once again, it's the writing. The underlying questions to me, what's this story about? Who's it for? It's simple. I mean, it really is about me and you and everyone we know. That's really what it is. It's about intimacy. It's about vulnerability and how we never outgrow that. Once I knew that was the theme, these vignettes came alive. That's why this film really took me in. The fact that the same looming part of life is thread through all these characters. Complete, in a sense. The boy we keep talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, this kid... You know, was he 4, 5, 6 years old, right?
Cutest thing ever.
Whatever. But this, cutest thing ever, right? I wanted to adopt. But at his age, the only thing you know about sexuality and intimacy is poop. That's your only reference point.
That's a fact.
And then sometimes you never outgrow that, right, Adam? And then you go into preteen. But my point is that it threads through the entire experience of life. And that's what I like about these films. When the theme is all encompassing, preteen. All you want to do is grow up, be able to look out the window in the door. Then you go into teenager, where everything's narcissistic. How do you feel about me? Right. I want to know how you feel about me. Then in adult life, where all you want to know is how can I hold on to what I have? And ultimately death. old people and dying, but the theme stayed the same through all these people. It's that intimacy and that contact and connection. That contact, connection. Mm-hmm. And once I knew that was the theme, it made perfect sense to me. This really is a beautiful movie. And the way it's written with that as its backbone and all these little vignettes, it's not about you at this stage in your life or you at that late stage in your life. It's just about life and how that looming cloud of intimacy and how we feel about connection and sexuality.
Yeah.
It never goes away. The guy who's 80 years old and the kid who's 5 years old, they had the same fear about the same exact thing. This is a deeper film than you think.
And they both wore diapers.
Jesus, nice. Well, incontinence joke. I like that. Right. But listen, I don't want to get too deep into the theme because I did like this film. Matter of fact, hey, guess what? Bump me up to an 8 right now. This is a good movie.
Okay.
This is a good movie. Take me to 8. The more I hear myself talk, I like it more.
No. Jeez, I'm about to go to a 10 with that. I'm tearing up a little bit listening
I know.
To
I was about to say, I'm about to start crying.
Man, yeah, because...
No, I feel you, man.
It just resonated with me. And the thing about the indie quirk thing where it's off the rack. Okay, we got to get the little chirpy little score.
Right.
We got to get the sad bastard in there.
Right.
We got to get the guy who's not knowing where to go at this stage in his life.
Right.
And then this pixie spirit girl comes in, you know. It's all there. Fine. You know, I've had a million tacos, but if you tell me you can make me a good one, I'll eat it. I knew what this was, but all right, you want to do it well? Take me there. That's the way I approached this film. First time, I was really put off by a couple of things, but I'm on board now. Second time around is a better view for sure. Let's take a break here. Me, you, and everyone we know. Let's hear a clip from the film.
So at the end of the next block, we'll separate it. Tyrone Street.
Yeah, the Iceland sign is halfway. It's the halfway point.
Iceland is kind of like that point in a relationship, you know, where you suddenly realize it's not going to last forever. You know, you can see the end in sight.
Yeah, but we're not even there yet. We're still at the good part.
So there it is, a piece from the film that we're talking about, 2005's Me and You and Everyone We Know. So, a few scenes to talk about, guys. I say we just elephant in the room, got to talk about. Do you want me to talk about that? Or anybody wants to?
You're the most eloquent. I think you can talk about poop the best.
Yeah. Listen, that scene, the first time I heard it, and this is where a lot of people parted ways with the film. They're like, get out of town.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's rated R because of this. And you know what? The first time is so off-putting, especially at the end when he's on the park bench. Spoiler time.
Oh.
I couldn't see beyond the scatological fetish, if you want to call it that.
Right.
But then I thought, wait a minute. Wait, it doesn't have to be dirty. This is innocence. It seems so uninnocent. But in his world, when you're talking about intimacy, a six-year-old, that's all you can relate to is poop.
Right.
But he doesn't understand that as later on in life, things change. Okay. I'm going to leave it right there.
It didn't offend me at all.
Didn't offend you at all? Why not?
No. I don't know how everybody else feels. But I took that as a... He's a little kid. This is what he knows. This is what he thinks. He said, "Oh, this might be kind of funny to say." He's wanting to say something funny, maybe to pick up on a woman. He says, "Oh, hey, say this," you know.
Yeah.
But he says it in such a dead forward, stone faced way that it almost made it funny to me.
Okay,
I wasn't offended.
I was howling.
I wasn't offended by that scene at all.
I wasn't offended at the park either.
I wasn't offended at that either.
I mean, she goes to the park, realizes it's the kid. I really don't think either of them were there to, you know, back and forth with each other. They were there, like you said, for the connection, like Max said, to have that connection. But nobody's taking that seriously.
Okay.
So they go to the park just for that connection to be like, oh, yeah, I was just being, you know, seeing how far we would go.
You know what, though, Hoodie? This became a horror story to me at that point. Because when he's going to the park, I'm thinking to myself, okay,
no.
I don't know what this – I'm about to watch a kid get into something that is either going to destroy him. I don't know what's going to happen. It was not sweet and tender to me. But let me tell you one more thing about the scene, then I'm going to back off of this one. The lady, the girl who he meets at the park bench, the first time you don't know to look for this, but the second time I did, when she's in her studio talking about people's disregard for what they think is dirty and what they think is horrible, you know, I don't know why people steer away from things they think are atrocious, she kept saying. Well, when you watch it the first time, you don't understand why that has weight to it.
Right.
The second time, I saw her as someone who is trying to think beyond her world a bit, and she's trying to venture out into what she thinks is this experience or this experiment. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but it just kind of rounded the edges.
She's lonely too. I mean,
she's very lonely. Yeah. It rounded the edges off. So when I saw her on the park bench the second time, it didn't seem so stark to me. I don't know.
Well, here's my problem with that scene. When they finally realize that it's each other typing back and forth,
She kisses him pretty passionately. By
I didn't not see a that. Passionately kissing.
I don't know. I saw it as a.
Is that a passionate kiss for you? Is that how you kiss passionately?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. It wasn't, answer the question. It answer
was
the
not
question.
A little. It was a hold your lips onto the.
No, I did not see that one single.
No, she kissed him. As
we
like,
know something
she
about
kissed
Adam
him as
now.
Like a thank you for you know letting me feel something again, yes, for letting exactly me be excited right for something again.
She's a freaking pedophile.
No,
no.
And I didn't see that. That. Max, I want you to talk about a scene that you've got to talk about that maybe
other than
is
that.
Not that one. Yeah.
The initial scene with the shoe salesman, the co-shoe salesman, and the two girls.
Oh, that's a hard
now,
scene to watch,
that
too.
That was a creepy scene.
I think that's creepy. The creepiest scene in the movie.
That's definitely the yeah creepiest scene. I mean, you think the park bench scene was quote-unquote creepy because she gave him a quote-unquote passionate kiss, which was ridiculous. That whole scene outside that guy's house, that was a creepy scene. Now, that guy has got some issues.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the girls had the same,
sure,
similar issues, I guess you could say.
You think yeah so? Similar. In what way?
But, well.
The girls said they were 18, by the way.
No, they didn't.
Well, they were symbiotic.
They did.
They said
he could tell they knew yeah they were not 18.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy was like, well, if you were 18, I could
I wish
tell you
that we
this
could live in a world, you know, where I would believe yeah that you were 18.
Yeah. And they were, and you were nice people and blah, blah, blah. But I can't because you're not 18, is basically what he said. And then he goes inside and the girls are sitting there, oh, my God, he's doing this. I see that crack in the wall? That's yeah where he's doing it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I dislike the girls more in that yeah scene than I did him because technically he didn't do anything wrong.
Right. They're the antagonist in that scene.
Yes,
and,
they are.
And they're egging this guy on as, oh, let's kiss and this and that. And it comes across as creepy to yeah me. Yeah. I don't know about you.
Oh, yeah.
It comes across as creepy from what they're doing.
It was kind
more
of
than
creepy
what he's doing.
It was kind of creepy that he let himself stay in that situation.
Yeah, yeah, that was creepy to a certain extent, but he knew better than to get involved.
Oh, yeah,
with
and
it
then yeah, it went nowhere. Even when they knocked on the door, he like flat out oh, on he, the, just on he, the floor.
Yeah, he freaked out. And that goes back to what you said a little while ago. He said, oh, the girls chickened out. They did not chicken out. The guy
no,
chickened out. The guy totally
wanted to do anything, but
they
kept they pushing
did
it, and yeah then they made it, and then the moment they didn't have that opportunity available, yeah, they were excited that they didn't yeah have to do it. And they're running down the street. Yay, we
hey
didn't have to do this.
I want
to
talk about these girls.
I don't think that's what the scene was at all. I think they got satisfaction from driving this guy totally insane
yeah
by offering themselves to him and him totally freaking out because I mean, you could tell the guy wanted to do something, but he knew better. He's like, oh, these girls are underage. I'm not doing anything with these kids.
So yeah, it was a game. The whole thing was a game,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it was a game.
So they win. By yeah knocking on the door and him chickening out, you know, they yeah win. They yeah beat yeah him at chicken.
I think that this is a film about intimacy and sexuality at different stages in your life.
Sure.
At that stage, there's no backbone of love yet. They haven't had their heart broken yet. They haven't had their world turned upside down by loss and love and all this stuff. So they're very innocent in this. All they know is that sex can control things. They
especially
don't,
from a woman's viewpoint.
From a woman's viewpoint, they have not understood, like the mother of this other young girl, understand. You can see the sadness in her eyes. She's had her heart broken. But these girls haven't had that experience yet. To them, sex is just power. Sex
it's
becomes
power.
Sex,
and sex
becomes
is a theory to them, too.
It's a theory. It's a way to get ahead. They were even trying to compete with each other.
Right.
Which is another creepy scene.
Wow.
But later on in life, I got thinking,
I'm not even going
to
say anything.
Sex means something else completely to a girl later on in life once she's once she understands that you can't control a man with that completely. Mm-hmm. It's like you see the mother later on in life and she looks sad because, well, she was probably these girls at one point in her life, but now she's learned that no, sex is not a way to control men.
It's not an ends
people
to a means.
Not an ends to a mean, yeah. That's what I'm thinking. Savage, what do you got?
I want to talk about the girl with the hope chest, the neighbor girl.
I like her. I'm glad somebody is.
With the hope chest. Too. It's this film kind of touches with the themes of intimacy confused with sexuality.
Yes, that's it.
And I think it tries to differentiate those things. It's like you can, especially at a younger age, confuse sexuality with intimacy. Whereas the neighbor girl, she understood intimacy intrinsically. And maybe that was because she was from a single mother right household, but she had her hope chest and she had her life planned with the trappings of domestication, that these are the things that will build a life for my husband and my daughter.
Yeah.
Not a son, but a daughter.
Right.
She's living vicariously through her dream.
Exactly.
So, I mean, and that was illustrated when they were laying on the floor and he's like, what would you say to your daughter? And she was talking everything that she ever wanted to hear from her mother and yeah hasn't heard.
Intimacy and sexuality are rugged waters no matter what age you are.
Right.
No matter what age you are. That's what this film
is. That's the second theme of the movie.
Yes. I still struggle with it.
But they're not intrinsically the same thing. You know, you can be intimate with someone. And the park bench scene, that's when it really hit home with me. Yeah. It was the simple way that he touched her hair. I mean, maybe the kid kind of understood that maybe she was...
Well, she wasn't sure either, but she looked at him finally and got it.
Like, I don't think so.
If you look at her face a second time, she's
they
like...
They definitely knew they were there to meet
him. I think they were
absolutely there because he sat on the bench and just stared at her.
This is my understanding of it. I think his innocent tenderness was enough to push her away from this back and forth meeting that she may have had.
No, you're wrong.
Okay.
They both knew they were the ones. I mean, there was a moment of realization on her face.
She looked at that kid like, oh, my God.
This is the person I'm supposed to be meeting.
Then explain the kiss then.
But that kiss was like, okay, you know what, kid? One day you're going to be here. You're going to be my age.
Maybe.
And this kiss is a kiss of good luck because this innocence that you have is going to fade away one day, and you're going to be on this side of the park bench, and I wish you well. I don't wish you harm.
If I'd have been on that bench, I'd have given that little dude a kiss too.
Yeah,
he's just the cutest little fellow.
I'll just make him explain the
wheel. He's got some big
old doe eyes. I got a question for anybody who can answer it.
Yeah, and by the way, we're talking about the 2005 film Me and You and Everyone We Know, in case you don't.
Good job, son.
What was the deal with the artist?
The artist with the stealing stuff and calling it art?
Yeah.
I feel like that was kind of a poke at the art world from Miranda July, who's very much a part of that world.
Yeah.
Basically calling art.
Calling BS on the art.
Exactly.
It just seemed like it was like this one-off scene. I thought that would go somewhere.
Yeah, but go somewhere with me. Because you remember back when
like a reveal, like in his show didn't get put on.
Well, let me tell you what it did reveal. It revealed to me that this woman's had enough of people giving her a line of crap. She wants something real. When she sees Miranda July's tape, that gave weight to the fact that, okay, this is why she needs to pick up the phone and say macaroni, because she wants to believe there's someone out there who's not ripping everybody off. When that scene happened with her and the artist, I could sense that this is not the first time she's had experiences. Come on, quit trying to fool me. Who is genuine out there? So when you see Miranda July's tape, she finally finds someone that is genuine. Okay. Without that scene of that artist, her calling and saying macaroni doesn't mean as much.
Okay.
Why don't we end it with the end? Let's talk about the end.
The coin?
I love that. I thought that was beautiful, man. And I don't know. I still don't know what it means. All it means to me is that a kid is seeing the world in a very innocent way.
Well, his mom earlier in the movie said that when the lights turn on, it makes this sound.
Yeah.
And that's what that is. That's how she explained it. Very matter of facts. Mm-hmm. And he took that as the explanation. And then he goes out on his own, decides he's going to explore the world for himself. Finds out that's not the thing, and I was cheesy and wrote down, things aren't always what they seem. Sometimes they're better.
Oh! And a tear rolls down.
But it really was. That was nice. So he comes out. There's a guy.
Yeah.
It was just such a nice scene.
The shores of innocence. And let me tell you why you need to see this film a second time. There are four scenes. I counted them. The second time, where the kid gets up in the morning, and he's walking around the apartment going, what is that? First time, that didn't mean anything to me. The second time, it hit. See what I'm saying? So, I mean, a lot of the big reveals here come well after the movie. And that's that part to me. I don't know what she's trying to say here. All I know is that when he gives that kid the quarter, all of a sudden it's like...
she's saying you got to find the meaning for yourself, basically.
Find the meaning for yourself.
That's how I took it.
And, you know, that goes back to some cheesy of this pretentiousness, too. Maybe it's just pretentious, but still, I loved it.
Yes, yeah.
Just saying you need to watch your kid.
Wind up being kidnapped eventually.
Right. You got to watch your kid.
Wanders off too much.
He does wander around a bit.
So that's our breakdown, as best we could do, of the delightful film. I'm going to call it that. You can part ways with me if you want to. 2005, Me and You and Everyone We Know.
And everybody's going up a point?
I went up a point.
I'll go up.
Yeah, I just went up a point. I went up 30.
I'll go up a point, too.
He said go 10.
Are you ready?
Adam? Yep.
You know what? I want to go up on a point, but the reason why is because of Michael's speech.
Oh.
Thank you.
Did you go up a point?
I inspired.
Yeah. So we went up 5.
We're at 34 now.
34.
That feels right.
It's on Netflix streaming right now. If you want to get into it, you want to check it out, give it a shot. Hold on to your innocence. It's there for you. As they all do, this film inspired a top three. Top three quirky relationships based on this film. Let's go over to a Matthew St. Hoodie. This list, number three, what's yours?
Edward Scissorhands.
Oh, yeah, it's quirky.
And what's her face?
That's awkward.
Really? What's her face?
Winona Ryder.
What's her face, yeah.
Whatever.
Her
face. Nah, she wasn't.
I just wrote down the name of the movie. I don't know the characters.
Yeah. Is that the criteria?
Well, it's not like there's two Edward Scissorhands in the film. You know which one we're talking about. What about you there, Gumbo Johnson? What's your number three awkward relationships in film?
I had a good... I had to go number three. I had to go Juno and Mark. That's the Jason Bateman character in Juno.
That's just a thought out response.
I'm just gonna go over to Max's list. Yeah,
I got a several you can pick from.
I got me some.
Just can't pick from those three.
Okay.
How about producer coming in with his number three?
I'm gonna kind of take a bite out of Matt here and go with Ed Wood.
Okay.
And who?
Well, both of his girlfriends in the movie.
Okay, that makes sense.
That's just.
No, it was an awkward relationship with him and
transvestite, and they have to kind of get used to it.
That's a good answer.
I've seen the
one doesn't, one does.
My number three, you know what it is? I had a hard time coming up with nailing down what my top three. We talked about this earlier. It inspired me. I'm going to go with Buffalo Bill and the Chick in the Pit.
Oh, my God.
The Chick in the Pit. That's not a relationship.
They had a relationship.
She was not there of her own volition.
They had a relationship.
I guess technically she tried to build a relationship.
Right. She puts the lotions on her skin.
Yeah.
She also killed a dog, didn't she?
She used the dog as a weapon to get out of the pit. Yeah. I'm going to go off the reservation. I'm going Buffalo Bill. I thought you'd like this producer.
No, that's good.
Chick in the Pit. That's it.
Chick in the Pit.
Chick in the Pit and Buffalo Bill. I want to give a nod to horror films.
We should open a chain. Chick in the Pit.
Chick in the Pit.
I'm going to go back on the reservation with Forrest and Jenny.
You thought
Jenny. I hated Jenny.
No, that's a good one.
That's a good one, but I hated Jenny.
It's definitely the most awkward sex scene.
Jenny was mean.
She was. She was a user.
And an abuser.
Forrest and Jenny.
Yeah, forever.
But she never hit him up for child support. You got to give her that.
Yeah, well, it's the least
not
she
died. Not that they showed in the movie.
It's the least she could have done was not hit him up for child support.
You didn't hear him going, I'm not a smart man, but I know what back payments are. You didn't hear that. I mean, she never hit him up for child support. This is, you know, fair.
Anyway.
Good answer, Savage.
I hated Jenny.
Number two is me. Go.
Punch Drunk Love.
You son of a bitch. Every single week.
And it's weird that it's an Adam Sandler movie, but I'm sticking with it.
You've never seen this, have you?
No, Savage. I never have.
It's a good movie.
It's going to be talked about.
Yeah. I'm going to go back and forth here. Number two, Benjamin and Mrs. Robinson, The Graduate.
Nice.
For crying out loud. Somebody had to say it for crying out loud.
It's awkward.
It is
It is a bit awkward, but he got the bang, aim, bang.
All right.
Okay. Producer, you awkward man. Number two, what?
Donnie Darko and Gina Malone.
I'll pick it up. He laid it down. You like that answer? I guess we do.
I think we all just kind of tune out when Adam starts talking.
I'm not picking up.
I thought it was going to be like Baby Godzilla and Mecha Godzilla or something awkward.
Now that would have been awkward.
That's an awkward relationship. Yeah. Not bad. Okay, I'll go there. Number two for me. Listen to this.
Go.
Fisher King, Jeff Bridges and Amanda Plummer, Jack and Lydia.
I haven't seen it. I
hadn't seen that in a while.
They're at with that first date. They're at the table. Savage, you with me?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah.
I'm going to explain. That would remind me. I hadn't seen it.
They're out on this date. He wants to be anywhere but on this date. Amanda Plummer.
Yeah.
Awkward isn't the word. They're at the table fighting over the dumpling, playing hockey.
Oh, yeah.
And then they take the walk down the street, and just the sweat is just pouring off of him. He doesn't know what to say to her. That's it. Number two for me, Fisher King, Jeff Bridges, Amanda Plummer. And we're going over to number two for a hard sub Savage.
I'll go Enemy Mine.
Wow. That's a good one.
Shigan and Davidge.
That's a good answer.
Yeah. That is a great answer.
Lou Gossett Jr.
I love that movie.
Dennis Quaid.
Yeah. That's, I love that movie.
Yeah.
The thing that was great about that movie, it was quote unquote an action slash science fiction movie, but it was the best scenes were them just sitting there talking around that campfire.
Exactly.
That was a good movie. Actually, it's dated as all hell, but it's good.
Yep. Still watch it today. I love it just as much.
You don't like The Last Starfighter.
Yeah. Your favorite movie.
I'm going to watch this man give me his number two, and I'm going to love it just as much, too. And what is that? Are we up to number one?
Number one.
Ooh, forgive me. Ooh.
Number one.
No more back and forth.
Awkward moment right there. Number one.
Give it up.
Eternal Sunshine with Joel and Clementine.
And Clementine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
That may be the eternal number one. I know this guy. That's Max Gumbo Johnson. Number one. Go.
I stuck with awkward. Greatest awkward relationship. I actually have two from the same movie, but I had to pick one. And I had to go with Travis Bickle and Betsy from Taxi Driver.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
The most awkward scene ever in a movie.
Sinister awkward.
He takes her to see a porno on their first date and has no idea that that's the wrong thing to do.
He's a classy guy.
Yeah. And then he buys her a record.
Like
he thought she might want to listen to it.
And who wouldn't? Who would want to listen to this?
I also had Travis and Iris, too.
Yeah.
That's an awkward one as well.
Everybody's awkward.
Yeah. Well, Travis isn't pretty awkward, dude.
Not so much quirky or psychotic.
He's awkward with everyone. Right.
That's sociopathic.
How about number one for you, Adam? What you got?
It's going to be predictable.
Well, I'm going to combine Matt and Michael's number two.
Uh-oh.
And go with a little Hannibal and go with a Punch Drunk Love and go with a Red Dragon, Tooth Fairy, and the Blind Chick.
I really would have thought Harold and Maude would have been your number one.
That's what I was thinking.
That's amazing.
That I didn't follow this. Tooth Fairy and the Blind Chick.
Yeah, the Blind Chick's from Punch Drunk Love and
the
Tooth Fairy.
Yeah.
Really? No, have y'all not seen Red Dragon?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Wow. It's called Manhunter.
You're picking Red Dragon over Red Dragon. Harold and Maude?
Right. I thought you would have
said awkward.
I thought you were going to say
awkward?
Hannibal and Clarice.
Whoa, everybody stop the presses. Harold and Maude's not awkward?
Nah.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Well, whoa.
That'll be brought up again. Trust me. Okay. I like the way he was ambitious with it.
Sure.
I'll give him that. My number one, was Punch Drunk Love. Come on. There's nothing more quirky than that.
That's true.
Beating up that bathroom like that.
That was
amazing. Love that scene. Love this man. That's savage. Number one, what is it?
The most awkward relationship in, in cinematic history is King Kong and Andero.
Nice.
That was on my list.
Is it really?
I did not write that one down, but I was like, okay, somebody's going to say that.
Batman and the Joker.
It's King Kong.
That's a good answer, isn't it?
And Andero.
I'm not a fan of it, actually.
He's not a fan of this.
But that is that's a great one. That's a great answer.
That's a strange relationship, man.
Yeah. That's good.
I want to listen to Max's honorable mentions. You always have a few.
Honorable mentions. Shrek and Donkey and Shrek. Cleopatra and Hans and Freaks. C-3PO and R2-D2. Kermit and Miss Piggy. Batman and the Joker. Felix and Oscar. And Elizabeth and Mikhail and Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Okay, so, you know, every week I put this out on Twitter. Want to see what comes back. Mm-hmm. Quirky relationships. Here's a few we didn't mention. Check this out. Kevin Dillon at KevDillon316. Starman.
Good right? one.
Awkward.
He doesn't say who, though. I can imagine Starman.
Karen Allen and Jeff Karen Bridges.
Allen. Yeah.
Good film, though. Rosender at Rosender. Harold Maude. Adam, he dropped the ball. He picked it up and ran with it. Jeffrey A. Kemp. At Jeffrey A. Kemp says Annie Hall. Oh,
all of Woody Allen's film, all of Woody Allen's relationships are awkward.
No,
yeah, but this is just the one, just his real relationships.
Yeah. Just the one with his daughter-in-law,
yeah,
stepdaughter, whatever.
And back to inappropriate adults. Bubbleweed says Marla Singer and Tyler Durden in Fight Club. How about Attaboy Clarence? Boy, you want to see a...
That's a good answer. Though.
That's a good podcast, too. You want to go to Attaboy Clarence. How about go check that podcast out?
It is. Attaboy Clarence.
Old check time it out. Radio, man. Yeah. Good stuff. He says Barbara Hershey and the ghost version of Roman Polanski.
The Entity?
Yeah, I don't know what he's talking about.
The Entity.
The Entity.
I have not seen
that. But the woman was raped repeatedly by a ghost.
That's a bad relation. Is that quirky?
Is that a relationship?
Based on true events?
It's awkward. It's awkward.
Yeah, nicely done. Attaboy Clarence. Follow him at @ATTABOYC. There's our rundown, our breakdown. Me and you and everyone we know, 2005, inspired our conversation that we just got into. Let's get into next week's show. And by the way, we're getting into our
Framley plan.
That's right.
Friends and family. Friends and family.
Matt don't like that.
He didn't like it very much. We're going to turn the cue over to our friends and family for a round.
Yeah.
We're going to let the people we know.
I'm okay with that.
Cue up a film.
I just don't like calling it a framery.
That's framery. Man. That's
framely plan.
That is so offensive to our Asian listeners.
Let me tell you something. You take friends and family, you get framely. We're ripping it off. Framely plan. So that brings us to start out the framely round. We're going to our producer, Adam. I think you said Daddy Rogers is going to cue up the next film,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's the guy that got me into movies. So.
Let's do it. What are we going to watch next week?
He wants us to watch Fantastic Voyage.
What year did this movie come out?
1966.
66.
With a stunning Raquel Welch.
So looking forward to that. That's next week. A Fantastic Voyage.
Come along.
Slide, slippity slide. Thanks, producer. And thank you for Mr. Dan Rogers. I know who he is. Good selection. Fantastic Voyage. Next week, we'll get into that. And we'll queue up another top three, too. We don't know what it is. We'll reveal it then.
Top hottest chicks that ever visited your colon. Oh,
I'm taking off my headphones.
But the list is so long, Max.
It is for me.
All right, that's next week. Thanks for hanging in with the queue this week. And once again, go to our website, qfilmcast.net. Tell us what you think of this show or any show we reviewed. We'll be back next week with Fantastic Voyage. See you then. Thanks.